The Way of the Wise Art, being given by John Rawson in Victoria, Australia, Module 2, Growth Through Conflict. Today we shall set ourselves to answer one simple question. Why is it that I have come into physical incarnation? To simply say because of karma is only one small aspect of the whole picture. After all, there must have been a stage far in the distant past when we had no karma. Nevertheless, something impelled us to take on a physical body. Let us begin by contemplating the first two lines of the verse. Two, not one, are the forces which feed us. One, not two, is the soul that will need us. In these two lines we perceive an important principle. Spirit is the realm of one. Physical incarnation is the realm of two. We need to incarnate in order to experience a second force, and this is the force, or energy, of the physical world. Can you remember a dream you had recently? Think back to this experience and ask yourself, how much choice did you have in your dream? Were you aware, for example, that you were dreaming? Or was it more as though you were playing out a drama where the script had already been written? Every night we enter again into the spiritual worlds in our sleep. In this way, we are preparing eventually for our final journey into spirit at death. Despite the wonderful accounts of some mediums and writers, once we leave the physical body and become part of spirit again, the experience is not a perpetual holiday, wandering through beautiful scenery and musing on deep spiritual realities. Rather, those forces which we had not integrated in our lifetime will place us in another play where, as in our nocturnal dream state, we have no choice but to follow the script. The principle of number two is the principle of choice. Even the idea of choice contains within it at least two options. And choice is only available to us in the waking consciousness of the physical body. The next part of the answer to our question, why did I come into physical incarnation, is then, so I can experience choice. Now, choice can only operate where there is an awareness that we have a choice. This awareness is a self-awareness. This self-awareness is not only aware that I have a consciousness, it is a consciousness that is aware of my consciousness. In other words, there are two selves locked up in each of us. Eckhart Tolle tells the story of how in one stage of his life, he began to become disgusted with himself. Everything, including his own existence, seemed loathsome. What was the point in carrying on? In his own words, I cannot live with myself any longer. This was the thought that kept repeating itself in my mind. Then suddenly, I became aware of what a peculiar thought it was. Am I one or two? If I cannot live with myself, there must be two of me, the I and the self that I cannot live with. Maybe, I thought, only one of them is real. This experience led Tolly to a profound realization in which he was able to integrate the experience of the two selves and discover the real self. Within each of us is a spark of the eternal. This spark of the Godhead needs the world of time and matter in order to perceive itself and so become self-aware. William Blake put it like this: eternity is in love with the productions of time. It is a wonderful and somehow humbling thing to realize that although we may be only the tiniest sparks of the divine, yet the Godhead itself cannot reach a greater fullness without our experience of this physical world. Look now at the central picture. It shows two snakes, one red, the other blue, intertwined around what appears to be a glass vessel. At the base of this vessel is a fire in the form of the sun, but the flame itself is mediated through the moon. This tells us that the I am, the sun, can only evolve through the experience of the world of time and space, the moon. The two snakes represent the two forces of space and time. The energies rise from the fire and create a liquid that come out of the mouth of each snake. This pours into the glass vessel, representing the soul. The whole is under a triple crown, indicating that the higher spiritual forces of the soul are overseeing this process. But just exactly what is this mysterious process? This brings us back to the next two lines of the verse. Life must be lived in the world as of old, but only the wise art is making true gold. If we live our lives from habits and patterns, this is the life lived in the world as of old. Our habits and patterns become rigid, they turn into karma, and we repeat another round in the endless cycle. This happens if we succumb to the enchantment of the physical world and forget that we are spiritual beings. When this happens, then we still continue to change and evolve, but it happens with extreme slowness. This has been compared to travelling a centimetre each life in a journey of a whole kilometre. There are 100,000 centimetres in a kilometre, in case you were wondering. On the other hand, if we become aware that we experience an energy from spirit, as well as the energy from the physical world, then we become capable of cooperating with our own evolution. We can now accelerate and empower our journey. The Buddhists have a saying: once one sets foot upon the spiritual path, then enlightenment can be achieved within seven lives. The act of taking conscious responsibility for who we are and what we might become is the act of making true gold. The gold is the fusion of the two energies within us. As the verse says, for while the old world works from feet to the head, the wizard is one who discovers instead when the light may flow down from the head to the feet, then the old and the new will fuse when they meet. Another way of understanding these two forces is to call them personality and soul. Personality is created from the earth forces. It is real only in this incarnation. When we return, although we shall bear some characteristics of this life, we are almost certain to have a completely different personality. Personality, then, is not real in the spiritual worlds. On the other hand, soul is a total spiritual reality. While it cannot be touched or weighed or measured in physical terms, it becomes our only reality in spirit. I recently came across a most wonderful description of the integration of personality and soul in these words. The personality is like sugar. When you put sugar into milk, the sugar dissolves, melts away. Thus, personality is dissolved into the soul. But you must let the sweetness of personality pervade the soul. Do not let the soul become sour by denying it the sweetness of the personality, and do not hurt the personality by what you think is the soul. The personality and the soul are one, and these both together a realization. Nothing is greater, nothing is lesser. This is the essence of the central picture. The personality, that is the red and blue snakes, is dissolving into the soul. By this we understand that although our personality will not be retained into our next incarnation, it will be absorbed into the soul. We might also understand that in this lifetime, we need to transform this personality so that what is taken into the soul will aid the soul in its onward journey. To discover that the light may flow down from the head to the feet is to discover the triple crown of our central illustration. At all times, we are overshadowed by the realities of spirit. Sometimes when I do readings, aura readings for people, I perceive above their head an energy that overshadows them, and that is the overshadowing reality of the spiritual worlds. And there are so many ways in which we may become aware of this energy, and these ways are available to us if only we open ourselves out to them. One of the simplest ways to create this openness is just to remind ourselves continually, I am a spiritual being, or I'm not a human being having a spiritual experience. I am a spiritual being engaged in a human experience. Imagine that you are caught in a moment of conflict or trauma of some kind. Well, we can philosophize about the experience of suffering. What doesn't kill me makes me stronger, as the philosopher Nietzsche famously said. A stronger response is the spiritual understanding that in the moment of conflict you are embraced by an energy that streams towards you from the spiritual worlds. Spiritual traditions have evolved countless techniques over the millennia But the highest spiritual practice of each tradition always comes down to living consciously in a consciousness of our spiritual heritage while experiencing the events of life in the physical world. This is the message of the image at the bottom right hand of the image page, the picture of the High Priestess from the Tarot. The figure of the High Priestess here represents that questioning that the higher spiritual energies, represented by the crowns of the central image, will place before us. On each side of the High Priestess is a pillar. One is black, the other white. In order to move forward in understanding, we need to embrace choice, for in doing so, we create awareness. Choice usually means a decision. The worst thing we can possibly do when confronted with a decision in life is to defer it. The Western spiritual teacher, Reverend Mario Schoonmaker, who since he was my spiritual teacher, I shall refer to from now on as Reverend Mario, used to say, "There is no such thing as a bad decision." This is because while choice creates awareness, decision creates growth. The picture on the bottom left of the image page is another drawn from the tradition of alchemy. Here we see a person in a grave, totally bound in the coils of a serpent. What happens if we don't embrace both forces that work within us? If we avoid choice and decision, we become bound and unable to move. In fact, life becomes a living death. Look once more at the central image. The red serpent represents the emotions and feelings, the heart. The blue snake signifies the thinking and the intellect, the head. These energies are the creators of our personality and character. Both need to work together. If the red serpent becomes predominant, then our emotions and feeling levels run away and we become erratic, sentimental, and moody. In such a case, we are bound by the serpent of our passions, controlled by our emotional reactions. On the other hand, if the blue serpent dominates, we become unfeeling, out of touch with the emotions, mechanical and calculating. In both cases, we lose touch with the spiritual worlds and live in a confined material consciousness. The uniting of head and heart with the soul produces the new consciousness, the gold of the alchemist. The figure in the top right-hand corner of the image page shows a man with the face of the sun. He holds in his hand the caduceus. He stands upon the physical earth, but is not created by it. And this image depicts the last two lines of the verse. When the two that were two once become wed as one, then the whole tree of man will shine forth like the sun. It is only on the other side of the veil, behind the High Priestess, that we can unite the two energies. When we join together the energy of the physical world and the energy of the spiritual world, we achieve transformation. The caduceus is the symbol of Hermes. Hermes, or Mercurius in alchemy, is the god of transformation. The purpose of our incarnation, in its simplest terms, is to achieve transformation. This transformation is not simply to become divine. After all, we're already divine, or at least one part of us is divine. The transformation of physical incarnation is to fuse the divine with the physical, and in so doing, achieve a new expression of life and of the creation. There is another way to represent too. Look at the bottom of the central image. It shows two lines intersecting each other at right angles. In other words, the whole of the image is based upon a cross. Another cross is found upon the breast of the high priestess. While the simplest way to represent two is shown in the top left-hand corner, where two lines stand side by side, the cross represents the intersection of the divine, the vertical line, and the physical, the horizontal line. The cross upon the high priestess indicates that this figure is that part of the Western spiritual tradition we might call esoteric Christianity. Esoteric Christianity understands the incarnation of Christ as a drama played out within each of us. That is, the divine Christ unites with the physical body of the man, Jesus. Through the act of the crucifixion followed by the resurrection, the divine completes the transformation of the physical. This talk is being given in the week before Easter. It is interesting how even spiritual people perceive Easter. I have heard people say they just want a quiet or peaceful Easter with no dramas. No dramas at Easter? How can that be? The drama of Easter is a reflection of the drama within each of us. If we are even slightly spiritually attuned, then Easter will enable us to discover the strength and nature of our inner struggles. Perhaps instead of asking for a peaceful Easter, we might ask that Easter reveal to us the truth of our personal inner struggles and conflicts, the tension between the physical and divine, leading to new growth and understanding. This brings us to the last aspect of the two. It is the principle of reflection. This is seen most clearly in the representation in the top left-hand corner of the image page. Here, black and white pillars reflect one another. The white is the reflection of the black. The black is the reflection of the white. We find this again in the black and white pillars of the High Priestess. It is echoed in the symmetry of the two snakes of the central image. We observe it in the snakes and wings of the caduceus. It is not found in the image in the bottom left-hand corner, for this is a picture showing the breakdown of the energy of the two. Two is the reflection of the divine in the mirror of nature. If we can come to understand this, then we have a powerful tool with which to observe the world, for we shall discover that our perceptions of the outer world are in fact a guide to the understanding of the inner. We shall make use of this principle in the journal exercises for this week. The purpose of this week's exercise is to help us experience the inner and the outer cosmos. The ancients called these the microcosm and the macrocosm. and considered one a reflection of the other. As the music returns, relax and close your eyes. Become aware of your spine. Imagine a hollow tube running up the center of the spine into the head, filled with an intense, bright light. Hold that image for a moment. Now perceive the light spread to a much larger channel about the width of your fist, centered on the spine, again running into the center of your head. When you have experienced this, now perceive the light filling your whole body. You now literally possess a body of light. Next, the light is filling the whole room, surrounding you where you are sitting. Now stretch your imagination further. You, sitting quietly in your chair, are embraced by a light that surrounds the whole planet. And finally, even the planet Earth is one tiny speck in a vast universe that pulsates with light. Experience the wonder of the light of the Godhead which created the cosmos. Then return to Earth. Feel the light surrounding and penetrating the planet. Then you are in your room, filled with light. The light returns to your body, transforming your body into pure light. Then next, to the column containing the spine, and finally, to the narrow tube in the center of the spine. Breathe deeply, then open your eyes, renewed. I look forward to sharing Module 3 with you soon.